Marilyn Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 12, delivered on September 26th.
Today, annuities and perpetuities. Let's begin with a review of the market. Is this a good day or a bad day on the market? Why do you say that? Now, be more specific. Is this a very bad day or just a little bit of a bad day? It's shaping up to be a very bad day. And we're beginning to have more of these than we're having good days. That means that we are approaching the edge. We're probably at the edge of the major market correction now. The significance of this goes in the bond market. If I see the bond market going down, what does that tell you? When I flip to the bond index, if the bond index is going down, what does that mean? You would expect that this is a stage two flight to quality, not just a stage one. So if we go over here and look at the bond market, we'll see the gold is up and the bonds are down. So as you had predicted, this is a second stage. In other words, investors are selling stocks, and in the first stage, they would be buying bonds to move to a safer investment. But in this case, the investors are selling stocks, they're selling bonds, and they are moving to gold. Interestingly, silver is countering the last couple of trading days, but we do see that there is a flight away from equity and even debt and moving into things that are safer like gold. So that gives us a second indication that this is a serious downturn. We see, however, that other markets, the FTSE, the Financial Times, and the Nikkei are actually doing well today. So you may see investors who are flowing their money toward foreign markets and just getting the hell out of the U.S. investment market right now. That is most likely the case. They're getting into anything that they can that is not a U.S. security of some kind, likely because of, as I had shown you, the Fed is frantically injecting liquidity into the federal funds market in an attempt to avoid the liquidity crisis that was the base cause of the crash of 2008. It didn't work in 2007 and 2008, and it probably won't work this time either. However, we will just have to wait and see now. The one thing that I would mention here is that as far as a crash is concerned, it is not likely that we would see a full-blown 1929 crash. As I had mentioned earlier in the semester, the financial markets are set with circuit breakers that start popping if stock prices go down too much too fast. And that would halt the drop. But of course, those circuit breakers will be punched back into place. And if the market still drops, then a second set of circuit breakers would kick in if it drops in the second round too much more. So there would be reason to believe that we would not have some insane crash of the markets, but it will, in this case, just keep going down every day until we have a much lower index level. If you will, with a quick look, you will see that there were a couple of bear rallies here in the early morning trading hours. There was a rally here. You see the little spike of bulls coming in to try to grab some stocks that were cheaper, but the bears came right back in, and then you had mid-morning another bull rally, but steeper was the drop. Now you're seeing an up and a down. that indicates that we have a tug of war going on between the bulls and the bears for the heart of the market. And we'll see how it goes in the afternoon. Most likely there will be more of a drop in the afternoon, and then there will be something of a recovery near the end of the day if the market behaves the way I've seen it over the many years. But it's still, we're at the edge of the major correction now. Moving away from that happy news, no, we're not on the edge of a recession yet. It is, the recession will probably not come until the spring, but still, that means it's not a good place for a job market. So as I've said before, if you're getting an internship, get it soon. And if you're aiming for getting a job, an actual career type job, then you should be applying now through January before the businesses get too skittish and they stop hiring. Going on to today's lecture, to go to a happier note, this is about annuities and perpetuities. And you should pull out your calculator if it's on your desktop. You can go ahead and do that. And while you're doing that, I'm going to ask just a quick couple of questions here. Let me try this. Madam, what is an annuity?
The beginning of the period.
Huh?
The beginning of the period.
Oh, that was a very weird answer. An annuity is a cash flow, a series of cash flows, like $100 tomorrow, $100 the day after tomorrow. Anything that would constitute a series of cash flows is an annuity. Now, what you're talking about is an annuity due, where the payoffs, the cash flows would happen at the beginning of each period, as opposed to an ordinary annuity where they begin at the end, where they are at the end of each period. So if you were taking out a car loan, you have to pay payments on it, right? Okay, so that is an annuity. Is that an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? You take out a car loan today. What would it be? What kind of annuity? An annuity due or an ordinary annuity? Do you have to make your payment right away when you take
down payment?
Well, no. Don't do that. We're talking about just your payments.
Yeah, they're at the end of the month.
So this would be what kind of an annuity? An ordinary. Excellent. We're on track now. Give her a cookie for the day. Okay, so in other words, most normal consumer loans, the payments you make constitute an ordinary annuity, as opposed to, let's start with one. I'm looking for someone I haven't bothered. Sir, you have been a happy-go-lucky, young, post-adolescent, college young man. And your life is just great. You know, every weekend is some kind of adventure, usually with something that starts with a girl named Addie or a girl named Molly. And and life is good. And then one day, your girlfriend says something that it's the kind of thing that, you know, you go to Amazon and see how much razor blades will cost, straight razors. She says, "We're having a baby." He just looked down, "Oh, hell, man, no, man." Well, you get your act together. You find out that killing yourself is really difficult, you know. And you get into the flow of being a responsible adult. Yes, indeed. You quit college. You get yourself a job at Jiffy Lube as the assistant manager on the south side of Toledo. And you do part-time work on the weekends doing Elvis impersonations at children's parties. And then the day comes and the child is born. And you say, "Well, I want to do right by this kid. I want to start putting money in an account starting today, and I'm going to put money into this account every year on the kid's birthday. Put the last payment in when the kid is 17, so that'd be 18 payments. So we write it forward to the year 18, and you can take that money out and pay for the kid's full college education. What kind of an annuity would that be? You're putting the first payment in. We are now at the day the child is born. You go out of the hospital, you're just exhausted. I mean, it wears you out. And you go right to the bank and put the first amount of money in, and then every year on the kid's birthday, you put in the same amount. And then at year 17, you put in your last payment, and then you write it forward to the 18th year. Is that an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? Excellent. That's an annuity due. Because you're putting in the payment, the first payment, at the beginning. All of them begin at the beginning of the child's year in that age. So you work out the cost of getting an education for the kid here at Illinois State University. You project it forward 4 years. You want to make sure you have all the money necessary. When the kid turns 18, you can pull the money out and buy the 4 years of education. And you find out that that is going to cost you $250,000. That's right. That's about what it would be. You will not believe how much it will cost you to retire and live comfortably. But this is just, so we have an annuity due. We don't know the payments. You set up with the bank that you're going to put the money into a locked account that you can't pull out and all that. So we are going to be able to pull out 3.59%. You're going to be able to get as the money comes in. It will roll over, recalculate at 3.59% every year. So in other words, the number of periods per year will be 1. Let the payment stream itself tell you what that number is, okay? So we're going to crank along here, and we're going to say that there will be 18 periods because there are 18 years, and it will be compounding once every year. Every time you put new money in, it rolls. And you want to know how much it's going to cost you to do this. How much will the payments be every year so that you can accomplish this task? And that's what these calculators are just dandy at doing for you. Essentially, if you know all of the other numbers, you can calculate any number in the profile for future or present value. In this case, we're going to go apps and just keep doing this until it gets to be second nature to you. And then finance, 1. And then TVM solver, which is 1. Now here you are. Okay, the N in this formula. It's going to be 18 years. And it's just going to be times 1 because there's 1 compounding per year. I percent is 3.59. And remember, if you're doing the apps, you key in the percentage. If you're doing real math, arithmetic, or algebra, you have to use the decimal version. But here it's, now there's no initial kicker. Everything is just the payments themselves. Now, we don't know the payment, but we do know that the future value, what we want at the end of this timeline, is going to be $250,000. Now, as I said, always leave P over Y and C over Y alone, but go down here to payment, PMT. This is an annuity due, so you toggle over and hit begin. And then you just take it right back up to the payment, and you say alpha solve, which is the enter key. You need to put in $9,770.15 every year. 977015. That's what you will need to put into that education account in order for it to have $250,000. That's at when the kid turns 18. You put the last payment in on the kid's 17th birthday. Then you ride the whole amount out for that 17th year, and on the 18th birthday, that's $250,000 will be in the account. This is one of the things about we do in financial planning. As I've mentioned before, essentially people tell us what their goals are. We want this at this age, we want that at that age, we want this kid who's 7 to go to college, and we got a 3-year-old who goes to college. We just calculate those on an Excel sheet for each one of the goals, and then we add them up and say, you give us a check for this total of the payments, and we will see to it that each of these goals is hit with the right amount of money during your lifetime. That's financial planning in a nutshell. It's actually not that complicated, but it is to the extent that you have to have them, first of all, trust you that if they write you a ginormous check every year or every month or whatever it is, that you will be able to accomplish what they want. The second thing is, and this is even harder, is keeping their mitts off that growing pile of money. Because if you reach in there when the kid's 10 years old because you really, really want to have a kegger, that just blows the whole cash flow stream, and we have to recalculate everything, and it gets bad because all the payments have to go up simply from that point forward, simply to correct for the lack of financial discipline of your client. Like I said, though, it is actually, this is, if you're interested in financial planning, if this kind of thing interests you, let me know. We have a great financial planning institute here now, and we have a minor, soon to be a major, I guess, in financial planning. Anyway, there's one. Now, let's leave this alone, and we're going to just, I'm going to do these, like I said, I can show you formulas all day long, and I probably will at some point, but the practical use of them really makes it hit home a lot easier than doing it some other way. Let me try this. Okay. I'm going to ask you, sir, what's your favorite car? What would you like to have for a car? Oh, really? I mean, let's be realistic here, you know. Yeah. You know, something that's nice, but, and don't say, I want me a, what is that ugly ass little car that that Soul, is it called, the Boxer? Yeah, I mean, don't they recall for ugly anymore? I mean, what do you want? Just something that's nice, you know. A Tesla. Really? Fine. Whatever. Wow. Actually, I have to say, I've seen a couple of those driving around town. They are sweet looking. Have you, any of you seen one? I mean, I don't know how long. I wanted to run into the side of it just to ruin the guy's day, but I figured the batteries in it would probably explode half of downtown Bloomington. Okay, so what I need to do is go in, and I'm going to just go to Google, and I'm going to type in Tesla and see a Model 3. Oh, that's ugly as hell. Let's do a Model X. Yeah, what is it? They look like Aero jelly beans. They're 81,000. Screw that. We're going back to the 3. 35,000. Okay, fine. $81,000 for a car that you have to plug in to get it to work. Okay. We'll see. Anyway, it runs $35,000. Now, you do some negotiations. I want the $35,000 out the door, tax and title and everything. 100% financing on the loan. Okay, that's fine. We can do this. So we're going to finance right now. That means that this one is a present value. We need to know the payments that will be equivalent to a present value of $35,000. Is that what that is? Yeah. So in other words, the price value, the price, like I said, P present, P price, okay, is 35 grand. Now we're going to do this on a 6-year loan with monthly payments. Though that would mean that it would be 6 years times 12 months per year. And we can get an APR on this loan. Let's say that we can get an APR of, 4.79%. No down payment. We'll just let it be 100%. So, we can just push it into the calculator. And if we do that, we're going to say, okay, apps, finance, TVM solver. In this case, 6 years times 12 payments per year. You tell me, how do car loans work? When you get the loan, do you pay your first payment when you leave the dealership? So is it an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? Good. Yahtzee. Almost all consumer loans, unless I were to say something completely different, almost all consumer loans are ordinary annuities. A lot of times, when you're financing something for the future, it could be ordinary or it could be annuity due. Practically speaking, if you're financing something for the future, it's almost always going to be an annuity due. Otherwise, you'd be, if it were an ordinary annuity, for example, that case with the child's education, if that had been an ordinary annuity, you would have put your first payment in at the end of the first year, and then you would put your last payment in right before you withdrew the money. You put the last payment in one day before the kid turned 18, and then you take it all out when the kid turned 18. So normally, just by common sense, it's going to be forwards are going to be annuity dues. But this is just a consumer loan. Now, the next thing we have to do, don't ever forget to do this part, is we got a 4.79%. But that's an APR, annual percentage rate, so we have to divide that into 12 periods. In other words, this will be recalculating your loan every time you make a payment. Now, the current value, the price value, and I said this before, don't forget, present values you always key in as negatives. Don't put a minus sign, use the negative sign. And this, in this case, it's 35 grand. Whoops. Wow. Now, don't clear the payment. For heaven's sake, if there's something in there already in the register, leave it there. You can go back and fix it. Future value. That's going to be a zero. The only time it wouldn't be a zero is if this is a lease agreement. Because with a lease agreement, you actually pay an amount at the end if you want to claim ownership of the car. But in this case, I mean, it's just ordinary. It's just normal. So now you go down and make sure that you toggle back to end and come back up here, get back up to payment, and say alpha sol. $560.27. That's a lot of money for a car. I mean, yeah, that's a lot. It's even worse. I'll show you a quick example here in just a minute. But anyway, there you go. You can calculate your loan amount. Real quick, I want to show you one. This happened a couple of years ago. This fellow that I had met, he was a new hire as an executive at a very substantial but fairly unknown company here in town. Soon as he got to town, he was from Texas. He said, "I've got to buy me my Ford." "You buy Ford cars?" "Oh, hell no, I'm going to buy me a Ford F-150. Oh, male from Texas. Yeah. I found out, after he bought it, I found out that the sticker, and he'd gotten a lot of bells and whistles on it, might have been a 250. I can't remember. But the cost to him was about $52,000 just for his car, truck. And he got it on interestingly enough, he got that on a 5-year loan. And his APR at the time was 3.99%. It was back when they were doing a lot of deals. And so just quickly, I'll show you what his payments were. Now, they were actually a little bit different from this because I didn't include the tax and title on it. But it was 5 years times 12 months per year, 3.99 divided by 12. The price value was negative $52,000. Whoops. And everything else is clean, so I can do alpha solve on the payment. Howdy doody. Yeah, he told me his payments were just shy of a grand. A month? Yeah. Is it worth it? Well, hell yeah, it's a truck. What was hilarious was that he was living in some of these fancy upscale gentrified apartments down in downtown Bloomington, a high-rise down there. He pulled his truck into the parking garage and he sheared the hood off on the top of the parking garage roof because it wasn't built for giant Abrams tanks. He was unhappy. Okay, so anyway, there's your cautionary tale for the day. Now, I want to show you something. The APR is actually not the true interest rate you're paying. You see, the compoundings that actually have the effect of causing the interest rate to be more than what it looks like. And I'll show you what that means. It's called the effective rate. I'll show you a formula for it. Then I'll show you how you can get it on your calculator. There's also a function in Excel that does it too. But the effective rate is going to be equal to 1 plus the APR over the number of compoundings per year. And then you raise that to the number of compoundings. Now, notice a couple of things here. First of all, minus one, dead. First of all, it doesn't matter how much you borrow, the effective rate is driven this way. So there's no present value, future value. The second thing is, it doesn't matter how many years the loan is, it's just how many compoundings per year are driving it. Now, I'll show you in practice, and then I'll show you how you can get it on your calculator as well. Let's do this. His loan right here, I would do 1 plus 0.0399 over 12 to the 12th power minus 1. That's how you do it. And again, this is an actual formula, so you have to use the real decimal number, not the percentage. So to do that, I would just simply say 1 plus 0.0399, close the parenthesis, to the number of compoundings per year, 12, minus 1. Oh, what? Oops, I forgot. Sorry. clear that. Forgot to divide by 12. Hey, I have destroyed more companies with my bad math skills. And to think I was a math teacher for many years, divided by 12, raise that to the 12th power, minus 1. 4.063. Okay, so it's about 4.06% is the effective rate on the loan. Because that those compoundings every year actually cause the effective rate to be higher than the APR. Now, interestingly enough with this, this actually creates kind of by law, a lender has to disclose the effective rate, but they don't have to advertise the effective rate. They can say APR 3.99% and then hide in the fine print the effective rate is that much. So that gives you an idea of sort of the what is actually happening. Now let me show you something here. That loan that I just did there, it's still in the calculator's registry, back there in the time value of money. Now watch what I can do. Apps, finance. And if I scroll down through the finance functions, I will find that letter C is the effective rate, EFF. So I can hit enter. And let me see if it'll actually read what's in there. Nope, it won't. I'll have to put it in. The effective rate is 3.99, 12. I think it's in that order. Yep, there it is. I thought it would. It does some of the other functions, reading off the TVM numbers. But the effective rate, there it is. You can do it with the calculator or you can do it with the formula. Considering how badly I key things into the calculator sometimes, I like these formulas a whole lot. Yeah. Say that again. What does APR stand for? Number of compoundings per year. And then you raise it to the number of compoundings per year. So that's why it's divided by 12 for a monthly loan, and then to the 12 for the number of periods per year of the loan. Now, here's where it gets a little bit hairy. But before I do that, let me show you something here real quick. There in the TVM solver, you see the numbers for that loan, for that truck. Let me come back out, and I'm going to show you something. I can do apps, finance. And I could say, how much is left on that loan after, let's say, 24 months? Number 9 in the finance functions, you say balance. Well, after 20, you have to put in the same numbers that the calculations were in. So I'd have to put this in after, let's say, 2 years. That'd be 24 months. He still owes $32,000 on the loan. Now, if the truck is worth, let's say, in 2 years, $40,000, we say that he is right side up on the loan. In other words, the value is more than the loan. But if he is, if the truck could sell it, let's say now for $28,000, he is upside down on the loan. That's one of the problems with especially long-term loans like home loans. By nature, you're going to be upside down for quite a few years. Let me show you a quick dirty calculation here. I'm going to do one. Your dream home. madam, is a $220,000, two-story, three full baths, one half bath, four-bedroom house in Schaumburg. Hey, it's right near the Cheesecake Factory at the Woodfield Mall, you know? Life could be worse. Except, did you see that guy drove into the mall? I mean, what was that about? He drove into the mall, and his airbag went off, and he goes... Anyway, okay, so you want a... And let's say, just run through it real quick here. Apps, finance, TVM solver. We're going to do this on a 30-year monthly fixed-rate loan with an APR you can get at, let's say, 5.19%, dividing off by 12 for 12 periods per year, and go down to the present value you want to borrow, the full amount of the loan, 100% loan-to-value at $220,000. And these are this is an ordinary annuity, so we can just say from here, alpha solve. Your payments would be $1,206 a month. Now, well, yeah, that's your payments. Now we're going to go back out, and we're going to say, all right, how much do you owe on that loan after 10 years? We would go apps, finance, the balance, 10 years in. That would be 10 years times 12 months per year. You still owe almost $180,000. In other words, you have amortized only about $40,000 of that loan 10 years in. Let's see something else. How much interest cumulatively have you paid over those 10 years? We can do that one too. Apps, finance, go down to the one that's sum of interest. A. And this one you would say, how much interest have I paid in from month one, comma, to month 120? You have paid a whopping $104,771 just in interest in just one-third of the life of the whole loan. That's why most defaults... you see this house price here, $180,000? If we have a housing market crash, you have a whole lot of people who go upside down on their loans if it's still in the early years of the loan. And if you're upside down on the loan, you have an incentive to just default on the loan. Say, nope, here, bank, have the loan back, have the house, I'm out. So you see that in the when they're... If you have a surge in home buy right before an economy goes into recession, you're going to have a whole lot of those people who bought their homes within the last 5-10 years go upside down very quickly, and they'll just walk away from those loans. They'll just say FTS. Fancy that scenario. Okay. Now for the big one. One last one before I go on. There's a deeper formula, and it's one that you would have to do by an arithmetic formula. It works like this. Well, let me do something real quick here. Suppose that how many years would it take to grow $4,000 to $10,000? at an APR of 3.65% compounded quarterly. In other words, you want to know, okay, I'm going to put $4,000 in the bank. How long would it take for me to put it into an account that pays 3.65% compounded quarterly? Just going to leave it there. How many years would that take? Well, remember that the future value is the present value times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. Okay. So in this case, we want to have a future value of 10,000 off an initial value of 4,000 times 1 plus 0.0365 over 4 to the 4 times the number of years. This is the nasty from your algebra days where you have to solve for a variable in an exponent. And from my days of teaching remedial and introductory algebra, you always try to peel the onion, get as much out of the way as you can. First thing, I'm going to take off this 4,000 and divide it by both sides. So I've got 10,000 over 4,000, which gets that 4,000 out of the way. And 10,000 over 4,000 is 2.5. And I'm going to call the number of years X. And this is where, if you remember your dark, dark past, if you need to get an exponent peeled away, you're going to have to take a logarithm of both sides. We'll just use a natural log. Doesn't matter, you can use a common log. And the reason we're going to do that is because with logarithms, there's a rule that an exponent can be pulled off to the front. Whoops, log. Yeah, that's how you have to do it. So if you see this problem in your homework, you've got an exponent, an unknown in an exponent. You peel it off by doing a log on both sides. And so I'm after this thing, so I can basically divide off everything else. This is just a number, a weird number, but it's just a number. And so I divide both sides by log. And then you got your x. X is going to be the natural log of 2.5 over 4 times the natural log of 1 plus 0.0365 over 4. I mean, there is a routine in Excel that can solve for an X, but you have to download one of their applications packs for it's called the Solve app. And you can, it's really a pain in the butt to use it though. I mean, for a really complicated problem, yeah. But for this one, it's almost not even worth trying to do in Excel unless you have to. Okay, we are going to do this in one string because if you start trying to estimate and key back in, you're probably going to get into problems. So I'm going to do the natural log of 2.5 And then I'm going to divide that. And I'm going to open parenthesis four times. And then I'm going to take the natural log and say 1 plus 0.0365, and follow me, divided by 4. Where the heck did I write that? Yeah, divided by 4. Close a parenthesis, and then don't forget to close your last. These parentheses must be finished off. Your denominator, be careful. And I've mentioned this before, by the way. If you don't know if you've done your parentheses right, this doesn't prove that you've done them right, but this is how I do it. I always, an open parenthesis is a count up, a closed parenthesis is a count down. So 1, 0, 1, 2, 1, 0. You should always come back to 0 in your parenthesis count. This is true in Excel, too. There are times when I've literally walked through the count just to make sure I did it right. And if I did this right, survey says 25 years. Actually, 25 years. Well, you want more accuracy and you don't want decimals? I don't know if you were ever taught this. And I'm not sure whether your homework, I didn't put it in there, but Cengage puts its own problems in there. So, okay, 25 years. Well, how many months is that? Subtract off the 25 and then times the result by 12 months per year. Oh, it's 25 years and 2 months. Well, I want to know how many days. Okay, you subtract off the whole number of days. And then you take the result and you multiply that by an average of 30 days per month. Fine. It was 25 years, 2 months, 18 days. Well, how many hours? Minus the 18 and then times 24 hours per day. 13 hours. You want to see how many minutes? No. You see, you could get down to whatever accuracy you want doing this. Sometimes it's actually useful so you can know down to the number of days. I mean, going to the number of minutes is just a little stupid. So, of course, I'm going to do it just because it's stupid. So you subtract off the number of hours, 13 hours, and you times each hour had 60 minutes, so you multiply the result by 60, 24 minutes. And, whoops, yeah, 60 minutes in a sec, 60 seconds in a minute, and 31 seconds, no more. Like I said, I don't know if they want you to do it down there. I didn't do that when for my problems, but Cengage puts it in its own, and it might do that. But that's how you get through that little mess, that knotty little mess there, if you have to know the number of years. And actually, surprisingly enough, people will ask that. If I put this money in the bank, now, when will I have so and so much money left? Okay. That's enough. I'm going to give you a quiz now, as I promised. And when you're finished with a quiz, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.